Hello, everyone, and welcome into another episode of the University College Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Brandon Apter, the Marketing and Social Media Specialist here at University College at Kennesaw State University, and I am your host. Just a couple of announcements before we get into our guest for this episode. The Strategic Outreach Initiatives in University College are hosting a variety of money-wise workshops to help students in different financial aspects of college life, from budgeting to credit to student loans and investing. There's just about everything covered in these workshops. It all begins on Wednesday, February 26th from 3:30 to 4:45. With Budgeting 101. There will be a second session for this on Thursday, February 27th from 12:30 to 1:45. On Wednesday, March 4th from 3:30 to 4:45, that will start the Credit 101 workshop, and there is a second session for that as well on Thursday, March the 5th from 12:30 to 1:45. There's also a pair of Student Loans 101 workshops, Wednesday, March 11th from 3:30 to 4:45, and Thursday, March 12th from 12:30 to 1:45. And finally, Investing 101 will take place on Wednesday, March 18th from 3:30 to 4:45, or Thursday, March 19th from 12:30 to 1:45. Space is limited in these workshops, and all workshops are held in the University College Building number 430, room 200 on the Kennesaw campus. You can reserve your seat now by emailing your name and KSU ID number, as well as the dates you'll be attending to UC Strategic Outreach at Kennesaw.edu. Again, that's UC Strategic Outreach at Kennesaw.edu. Workshop attendees will receive a $50 KSU bookstore voucher for each topic attended. And the MoneyWise Workshops, as part of University College's Strategic Outreach Initiatives, is presented in partnership with Hensler Financial. Moving along to our second and final announcement, some exciting times in the Department of First Year and Transition Studies, as there is a brand new course that is going to be available starting in the fall semester of 2020. TS4490 is Special Topics in Transition Studies and Transitioning to Graduate School. Students will examine and compare graduate school requirements and develop strategies and products associated with being a successful grad student. It's a 3-credit-hour course, and it will go over a lot of integral topics when it comes to transitioning to graduate school. If you would like more information on the course, please email the Department of First Year and Transition Studies at fyts@kennesaw.edu. Now, for our guest this episode, we'll be joined by Jim Davis, Associate Professor of Theater and Performance Studies at Kennesaw State. He is also within University College's First Year and Transition Studies. So Jim comes and joins the show to talk about what's changed at Kennesaw State since he joined the university in 2007, the different classes that he teaches between the first year seminar classes and the theater and performance studies classes. And we will also dive a little bit into nerd culture, comic books, superheroes, professional wrestling, to really find out how Jim's passion relates to his everyday job at Kennesaw State and his teaching in the classroom. So without any further delay, please enjoy this episode of the University College Podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back into the University College Podcast. Right now, very happy to be joined by Jim Davis, Associate Professor of Theater and Performance Studies here at Kennesaw State. Jim, nice to finally have you on. I feel like we've planned this a couple times.
Yes,
scheduling conflicts have happened.
Yes, we are both busy men, so I'm thrilled to be here, Brandon. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this episode. You and I talk on a pretty regular basis about a number of different things, more so about outside of work stuff than at work stuff. But we're going to keep this to a little bit of both. So to start things off, why don't we talk about what first intrigued you about teaching, becoming a college professor, and specifically how your passion for theater, comic book culture, and professional wrestling, which we'll get into later, how that all kind of inspired your professional trajectory?
That's an interesting question, and I'd expect no less from you.
Yeah.
I've always had kind of these two brains going on. The one, you know, kind of the professional one, where I have wanted to make theater in whatever capacity. I started out as an actor. My first professional job was here in Atlanta at the Center for Puppetry Arts. I spent 5 years there.
I just went there for the first time like 2.5 weeks ago.
No kidding. It's
very cool place.
It is spectacular, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And have been very, very fortunate to have spent really my entire professional career working in theater. But also there's been this other side of my brain where I've wanted to be of service to people and help people. And so it made sense to me to somehow run those two things into each other and mm-hmm. and teach theater. And I was always very inspired by the professors I had as an undergrad. I went to a little school in Iowa called Clark College, which had a BA program in theater where it was a tiny program. And so if you were in the play, that also meant that you went and built the set. And if you weren't in the play, you were up in the booth running the lights.
Yeah.
And so I was always very inspired by that training, too. And that was one of the things that really appealed to me about Kennesaw, because we are also a BA program. We are substantially bigger than Clark College. We have about 200 majors, but we're still kind of philosophically, we're very, very similar. And mm-hmm. we're, like I said, we're also a BA program, and we also believe in a real holistic training where our students are going to get a little bit of everything. So I'm a big fan of that. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, kind of.
Okay, kind of.
Danced around a little bit, but got to the heart of it for sure. So what about Kennesaw specifically? You know, you taught a little bit at Bowling Green. Mm-hmm. So what specifically brought you to Kennesaw and started off what I guess is now a 14-year career so far?
Yeah, something 14? Like that, yeah. I always say that there was a very specific moment that kind of pushed me in this direction. I had finished my PhD at Bowling Green State in Ohio, like you mentioned, and I was there as an instructor. And I had a great, great department chair there. His name was Ron Shields, who's out a dean at a school in Texas now. But Ron walked into my office one day, and he said, "The university is doing something with first-year students. I really don't know what it is, but I signed you up for it." And I went, "All right."
Sounds good.
Sounds great. And he was a guy I just, you know, still to this day trust explicitly. So if Ron says to do the thing,
I did the thing.
I do the thing. And so I started working in the first-year experience up there, which was different than our first-year seminar here.
Right.
But worked in the first-year experience and really found that it was tremendously useful for the students, and it was fun to teach. And I was, of course, looking for another job because I was an instructor there. I was looking for a tenure track position. Mm-hmm. And one day I saw this job pop up where it was a joint appointment in theater and performance studies, which is my formal training, obviously, but then in our department of first year and transition studies, too, which is what I'd been doing at Bowling Green for a couple of years. And I got to move back to Atlanta. I love Atlanta as well.
Yeah.
And so I thought, I am probably the most qualified human being in the world to teach this job, and also probably the only human being in the world qualified
to teach
this
job. Description was written for you.
Yeah, exactly. So I really lucked out. So that's one of the reasons I ended up here. Probably the biggest reason I ended up here.
So you've been at Kennesaw State mm-hmm. since 2007, and there's been a lot of change since then. I mean, there's been a lot of change since I started here in 2018, whether it be the new branding, new president, departments coming and going from colleges. Mm-hmm. So technology aside, you know, 2007, 2008, like that's when social media really started to explode, aside from like MySpace and Zanga. So technology aside, what have you observed to be some of the bigger changes at Kennesaw, and how do you see it growing moving forward?
This is going to sound strange from somebody who teaches primarily in College of the Arts, but I think when we had the Marietta campus join us, and we have all this engineering and kind of hard science stuff. One of the things I do is I teach the theater and society class, the general education class. And I've been really lucky to have a lot of the engineers and mechatronics majors in my class. And I have found that to be so fun. And the ability to kind of cross-pollinate with those students, I think, has been really, really, really valuable. And I think that's going to have a huge impact as, you know, as our kind of, not even a relationship. It's beyond a relationship. We're all the same school. But as we kind of evolve into whatever we're going to evolve into next, I see integrating some of their stuff into things that happen on the main campus more and more. And I think that's going to be very, very exciting.
So it's always interesting to hear the two dynamics at the Kennesaw and Marietta campus, because it is very different, and each has their own personality, really. And each campus and the programs on each campus have seen a lot of growth over the past few years. You know, this past fall semester, fall 2019, I believe it was like the largest freshman class in recent history, or of all time, at Kennesaw.
I think the largest one ever.
Yeah, largest one ever. Mm-hmm. So it's continuing to grow, you know, from when you were here in 2007 to now what it is. Mm-hmm. Looking ahead, are there areas that you're excited about it continuing to grow, or kind of just continuing to find its niche in a couple of ways?
Boy, that's a yes. One of the things that I think is really fun to that's happening, and we've been kind of taking steps toward this too, is as College of the Arts becomes really more and more central to a lot of the collegiate experience. You know, I was just talking about the Marietta campus and the fact that our Department of Dance is really headquartered down there.
Yeah.
They have a dedicated dance theater, which is just spectacular, in the Student Center on the Marietta campus. And as really all of this programs in the College of the Arts grow and, like I said, become more central to the Kennesaw State experience, I think that's going to be really fun. And also, as the arts become more visible to the community off campus too, I know that when I started at Kennesaw State, I lived about 5 minutes from campus, and I said to one of my new neighbors, you know, I'm a faculty at the university. And my neighbor, who'd lived here for 20 years, said, oh, at Georgia Tech? And I went, no, the one that's 5 minutes from here. But just kind of the visibility of the university, not just in our neighborhood, but also
billboards downtown.
Yeah, billboards downtown. And in my discipline, you cannot go to a professional or in community production in Atlanta without seeing somebody from Kennesaw State, whether a student or an alumni or a faculty member who's working on it. So we are very, very present in the community, and I think that's only going to get bigger and better.
Yeah, so, you know, for students, in order to be present in the community, they apply, and then they come to Kennesaw State. And one of the courses that used to be required, not required anymore, but still a really, really good one for first-year students to take, is the first-year seminar class, which you've mentioned a couple times already. And one of the areas that you work in is University College's Department of First Year and Transition Studies. So this class, if anybody's listening for the first time, I feel like I've talked about it in just about like every episode we've done so far. It more or less helps students in the transition from high school to college. So with students in these classes being of different backgrounds, different personalities, I'm sure if people are listening, they're probably just like, oh, this guy has a bouncy personality and everything like that. So how, as a professor, do you juggle, you know, reaching the students that may be a little more guarded and also being able to help those students that are kind of here and already kind of know their way and, you know, just trying to make their transition as smooth as possible?
I'm really fortunate because I get to focus in on a real specific target audience, because 9 times out of 10, my students who are taking the first year seminar are theater and performance studies majors. Right. So I have a very specific target to aim for, as opposed to when I do also teach occasionally the first year seminar. That's just for kind of the general students. But when I teach it for the TPS majors, the theater and performance studies majors, like I said, we have a real specific target. I know what it will take to get them plugged into the department. And also, I always try to have a major project that's somehow associated with something that's going on in the department. This last fall, we did a big research project that was related to one of our main stage musicals.
Okay.
And that really got them plugged into it. And also it demonstrated for them that, research is a big part of theater. A lot of them are coming from, well, they're all coming from high school theater programs that have a just enormous variety of different experiences. And not to say that one is better than the other, but they're all very, very different. And just to kind of get them on the page that our department on, where there is a very, obviously, it's a, creating theater is a creative act, but also there is an academic element to it as well. So, I'm pretty lucky because I have a very specific place to work to.
Right. Now, in the general first-year seminar classes, they have the projects like the belonging portfolio and stuff like that. So how does that differ from, like, the stuff that you guys do? Obviously, you said it's more specific, but in that specificity, what sort of areas do you explore outside of, I guess, what you mentioned before with, like, the main stage stuff that was going on?
Well, we're also very lucky because we have a real active student body in the Department of Theater and Performance Studies. And so I have always had peer leaders who are upperclassmen who will work with first-year students in the seminar. We also have a student liaison program who are students who kind of act as, well, liaisons, between the student body and faculty. And I'm also very fortunate that I have a very, very supportive faculty in theater and performance studies who will come over and spend a day talking to our students. So I always try to bring the department chair over and at least two or three other members of the faculty, specifically members of the faculty that don't teach in the core. Some of our introductory classes, some of the professors who teach the skills, like in the musical theater program or acting or design, something like that.
Right.
A faculty member that a student might not get to work with for two or three semesters. So I can expose them to a person like that and, get them to understand what it takes to get to that point.
Yeah. So it's obviously beneficial that you teach in theater and performance studies, and it goes into your vast background in theater, whether it be directing, acting, designing puppets at the Center for Puppetry Arts or anything like that. So what specific courses do you teach in theater and performance studies? You mentioned a couple of the numbers, but what do students gain from the courses that you teach there with respect to their, I guess, theater career journey?
Nothing.
No.
No, that's not true. I did mention I teach the Gen Ed theater class, and I think that's such a great, important class because, as I tell my students, that it's not that I'm teaching them about theater, but I'm teaching them how people in theater do things, how they process data, how they collaborate. But as far as the theater classes specifically, I teach a course called Introduction to Theater Studies, which is it's kind of a dramatic literature class. We read a ton of plays and start to analyze them.
Do you have a favorite one to analyze and read?
Gosh, I love the old Greek stuff.
Yeah,
I love the old Greek stuff. So we usually do the Bacchae, which is a great play about Dionysus coming to town and everything crazy happens. it's essentially Footloose, but weirder.
Yeah. I mean, Footloose but weirder is
exactly.
a play we didn't know that we needed. But we have.
It's true. And then speaking of that, the other one of the other classes I teach is History Theory 1, which is actually the thing that I'm trained in. This is actually my discipline. I'm trained as a theater historian. And I love teaching that because I get to teach about the Greeks and the Romans, but I spent a lot of time talking about why these plays that are 2,500 years old are still wildly relevant today.
Yeah.
And the ideas that... Yeah, not just the ideas, but also kind of the practice that the Greeks, the Romans, and everyone had of, you know, producing these things. There are a lot of ways why it's not dissimilar to what we do today.
Right. So you were one of the first people that I met upon starting at Kennesaw State a couple of years ago, and we immediately connected over our enjoyment of professional wrestling. And my dad has been in the business since the 70s, maybe the 60s, I don't know. Although I don't watch it much anymore, you're still an avid follower of all of the federations going on, whether it be Impact, AEW, mm-hmm. WWE, New Japan. There's still so much out there. So you've been in publications, done presentations on wrestling culture throughout different times of sports entertainment. So what is it about pro wrestling that caught your eye originally when you were younger, and how, if at all, do you work it into how you teach? Not saying that, like, you professionally wrestle your students.
I have never put a student in the figure four leg lock, Brandon. Okay. If that's what you're implying, no. I'm uncomfortable.
Well, for
with
HR
that.
Purposes,
exactly.
I
yeah,
make sure.
Thank you. Plausible deniability. as far as what attracted my attention originally is, you know, this probably the same thing that every other nerd got into it for, where it's bigger than life characters and fast action. The fact that when it's done well, the plot of a story will move quickly and it'll just take you along. As far as kind of how it's impacted my teaching practice, people who study Shakespeare usually will study it, they'll read the plays, and they will analyze it, and, you know, probably in an English class, that's great. You know, that is vital. If you are going to engage with Shakespeare and his work, that's a thing you got to do. Mm-hmm. But as a theater historian, I love the idea of Shakespeare as the guy who owned the theater and wrote the plays and worried about selling the tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he wrote these plays, and obviously, I'm not saying anything new, that he was brilliant and his writing is transcendent. Yes, of course. But also, his plays are all about silly misunderstandings and violence and sex and just being excessive.
Right.
And that's not too far off from professional wrestling. You know, I'm really, really fascinated by the groundlings, the people who paid a penny to get in to see Shakespeare's plays, where he is writing for the common people. He's writing for people who probably don't know how to read. And he is trying to reach the broadest possible audience. And like I said, doing it through sex and violence and ridiculous behavior.
Yeah.
You don't have to squint too hard to see that as professional wrestling.
Because you can essentially not be a fan and look to just get into it and go to a show.
Oh, yeah.
And be able to figure out what's going
on. Yeah, exactly. You know, there is obviously a kind of a serialized element of it on TV, but if you just go to an indie show, you just get to see action. And you can figure out that's the good guy and that's the bad guy and go from there. And it's really fun. Also, it's, you know, I'm talking about kind of independent shows, it's folk theater. It's not any different than the community theater in my hometown or in your hometown that they are putting on a play because they love to put on plays. There are, you know, we live in Georgia, and we have a rich history of professional wrestling here. That's no news. And
I mean, it was like the epicenter for quite some
time. Yeah, for years. And it's really kind of coming back in the last couple of years, too. And, yeah, there are people out there who are wrestling on weekends because they love it. And that's really, really fun to me.
Yeah. So as we speak right now, you know, February 2020, we're well into the road to WrestleMania.
Yes, we are.
We've done the Royal Rumble, which is more or less like the kickoff to everything. And you know, the big main event that we are leading into is Brock Lesnar against Drew McIntyre, which, for those of you listening, if this is gibberish to you, you can maybe fast forward for 2 or 3 minutes until we conclude this aspect of it. But, you know, Brock Lesnar, one of those guys that has been in UFC, you know, martial arts, and whenever he comes back to WWE, he's not on the show every week, but he always has some title in his hand. So Drew McIntyre, you know, big Scottish guy, now challenging him for the title. It's always interesting to see how stories built, and I think that that has been a pretty good story so far. But I think for me, it's more or less like Drew McIntyre is a guy that's come up for a while in WWE, and it looked like he was rising for a while, and then he was forgotten, and now he's going to main event WrestleMania. So for me, it's just the excitement of just like, oh, wait, like, you know, I forgot how good this guy was, and now he's going to be doing this. So how are you viewing that to this point, and who do you hope to come out victorious?
I have a very similar response or reaction to you. Drew McIntyre is a guy I've always, you know, it appreciated his work, but I've never been the hugest fan of his.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of stopped paying attention to him, really, until he got this opportunity to be in the main event of WrestleMania. And I was watching Raw the next night where he came out, and the crowd went crazy for him. I'm not sure if it is because of who he is or if it's because he is in this very specific narrative position.
Yeah.
But either way, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
People love this guy. And, you know, I'm not a barometer of that, obviously. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I hope it is a fun performance that gets to develop. Brock Lesnar is one of the great performers of all time.
Yeah, I feel like he's very polarizing, too, because if he has a title for such a long time, people are just like, all right, you know, we get it. And then somebody else has the title for 3 or 4 months, and then he reappears, and it's just rinse, repeat.
Yeah. Sort of thing. And I think that WWE has a million kind of narrative shortcuts they take, and he is the beneficiary of a lot of those.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, the guy is Brock Lesnar is so kind of freakishly talented and fun to watch, and I think it could have the potential to be really.
He's
really
one of those
fun
people
cool.
that never breaks character.
Yeah, exactly.
Not once will you ever see him break character.
No, well, and you know the thing with him is, and yes, it's, you know, it's performance, but I don't know how performative it is.
Yeah,
because he gets to play a big, strong, mean guy.
And that's what you look at, and you're just like, he might be like that in person,
too. I don't think he's acting too hard.
but, yeah, I mean, this is a really exciting time for professional wrestling.
Yes.
You know, WWE, there's the new All Elite Wrestling started by Cody Rhodes, son of the late Dusty Rhodes.
The great Dusty Rhodes,
the
American Dream.
The late and great Dusty Rhodes. So it's very, very cool. When I was very into wrestling, it was the late 90s, early 2000s when WWE and WCW were going back and forth. And it was just nice to have a choice. It was just like, oh, I could watch Raw with The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin and Triple H and Shawn Michaels, or I could go to WCW and watch the NWO, Hulk Hogan, Sting. You know, it was just the heyday for professional wrestling, and now we're getting back to a point with AEW and WWE where people have an opportunity to have a lot of different viewing experiences. And I feel like for wrestling, or really anything, any other kind of brand and like nerd culture per se, like that's very important.
Oh, 100%. I have two sons, and I tell them both. One is far nerdier than the other one. But I tell them both, we're in the greatest time of human history when it comes to just nerdy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, wrestling or Star Wars or comics or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a ton of stuff out there. I showed my kids, I must have found it on YouTube, a video of the old Super Friends cartoon from the 70s. Yeah, you're grunting. You should grunt. I showed them about 5 minutes, and they said, this is terrible. And I said, yeah, I know. And it was the only superhero show on Earth when I was a kid.
And now you have everything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You have everything you could ever dream of.
Yeah, I have a million Avengers movies on demand on my TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a good segue into the comic and superhero side of this. And this has been really fun to talk about, really. You talk about the publications and presentations and wrestling. You've done the same stuff with comics and superheroes. So talk about some of the works that you've done on that end and how comic books have remained an important part of your life and really our culture overall today.
That's an interesting question. Probably the biggest role that comics have played in my professional career is a few years ago, I collaborated with one of my colleagues over in the other department, Dr. Charles Parrott. Shout out to Dr. Parrott.
Yes.
And he's also a comic book guy. And he was really fascinated by the career of Jack Kirby, the comic book artist who worked with Stan Lee, creating, you know, all the Marvel characters that you know. And Charlie wrote a play that was loosely based on the career of Jack Kirby. And I got to collaborate with him and work on it as a dramaturg, where I do research and kind of do the kind of, you know, academic end of it, and co-direct with him. And it was a play that we did here called Bloody Pulp, and it was wildly successful. And it told the story of a character who was, like I said, very much like Jack Kirby. But kind of the punchline of that play, and one of the things that I really, really took away from that process, was the fact that a lot of American popular culture was invented by these guys, the Jack Kirby's and Stan Lee's, folks like that, who were the sons of immigrants.
Yeah.
You know, Jack Kirby's real name was Jacob Kurtzenberg. He was a Jewish artist, and he had just an enormous impact on American popular culture. And so the fact that some of the biggest, you know, biggest movies and TV shows around, you can draw a pretty direct line from them right to Jack Kirby's work is pretty astronomical. So the impact of these guys and kind of understanding their context, I think it's really important if you are any kind of, well, if you're engaging in, you know, with popular culture at all, especially if you're, you know, an academic who does it.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting to see how comic books and comic book shows now try to, I guess, work their way into addressing real life issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always a little, for lack of a better word, comical in both senses. It's just like, well, you know, this is an over-exaggeration or an under-exaggeration of what's going on. But I thought it was interesting in one of the superhero shows, you know, they had aliens coming in from left and right and disguising themselves as humans so they wouldn't be, you know, discriminated against. And from the outsider looking in, it's just like, oh, well, you know, this is like super cheesy and a bad attempt at trying to do it. But they actually address some issues that were going on today. So I feel like a lot of people look at this stuff and it's just like, nerds. But it also sheds some light on how, you know, people might feel, how people get treated, given it might, again, be over or under exaggerated, but it still sheds a light on some things that people might not know about.
100%. And that's what the best art should do, whether it's comics or Shakespeare or anything in between. The best art is going to have a critical perspective, have a commentary on the real world.
Yeah.
And yeah, sometimes it may be kind of heavy-handed like that, but you know what? That's okay. You know, especially with, you know, comics and science fiction and anything like that, the best stuff is, you know, holds up that kind of weird, distorted mirror of reality.
Yeah, I think that it's good for the younger generation, too, because those that might not necessarily understand politics or might not understand, you know, specific things about discrimination or anything like that, it's kind of a dumbed down version of how things really are, but it's still a way for people to be able to relate to what's going on.
Well, I don't even know if you can say it's a dumbed down version. I think that anything that's going to allow somebody to think about the world, you know, put themselves in somebody else's shoes and think about the world from their perspective is a good simplified thing. Exactly.
View,
yeah. And
down.
Yeah, if that's, you know, if that's a way to do it, then, you know,
I think you're
right. You know, a simplified version.
Yeah. So circling back to your position as a professor at Kennesaw State, It's clear that you have a unique background with interests in a large chunk of nerd culture. So how would you instruct students on ways to pursue their careers while also being able to make their hobbies, like for you, comics and professional wrestling, part of their, you know, careers and their professional lives?
Boy, that's a good question. I
only ask the good ones.
You really do. I used to get this 150 years ago, back when I was an undergraduate. I was studying theater, and all my mom's friends would say, "What are you going to do with that?" And I don't know.
Yeah.
But you're going to do something. And I've been very fortunate. I've been to have spent really the majority of my career, my grown-up life, you know, working in theater, you know, whether it's professional theater, academic theater, in some capacity. Mm-hmm. We're living in such an interesting time right now where it is, I don't know if it's easy, but there are certainly avenues that are open for people to follow their passions.
Yeah.
And I would think that that's probably it. I think that is probably what I would instruct them to do. And I don't know, I'm also a terrible person to give career advice because I, you know, my first professional job was working at the puppet show.
I mean, I was dressing up as a band nerd at a minor league baseball game.
And look at us now.
Yeah.
But just follow their passions and do the thing they want to do, the thing that makes them
happy. And I think even if you have unique interests, whether it be comic books or something else, mm-hmm. nerdy or different, I wouldn't let that shy you away from pursuing it because, like you said, there are so many avenues.
Yeah.
And with the way technology and everything is trending these days, it's just hard to believe that there won't be something for everybody at one point or another.
Well, and also the term nerd, to me, kind of denotes kind of unbridled enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I'm not offended by it.
Yeah, exactly. Am I a theater nerd? Well, I don't know. I got, you know, 3 academic degrees in it, probably.
paper to prove it.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I'm a nerd about a number of things. And I think that the key to, you know, whatever success you want to have is probably that enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Be a business nerd or a history nerd or a biology nerd. And I think things will fall into place after that.
Yeah. So just before I let you go, in the theater side of things at Kennesaw, what sort of shows and stuff are upcoming that, you know, people that are listening might be able to look forward to?
Well, I'm going to plug my own show here.
Okay.
Shamelessly. and the aforementioned Dr. Parrott and I are working on a project kind of parallel to each other. We have an event that happens every spring called the New Works and New Ideas Festival. And we bring in new scripts and we try things and it's very fun. And we're kind of expanding on that this semester. So in April, we're going to have the world premiere of a new Theater for Young Audiences musical called Thumbelina,
cool.
which is written by a colleague of mine, Amanda Wansum Morgan, who's great. And that's going to happen then. But also Dr. Parrott and I have pieces that are going to run back to back on 3 or 4 nights during this.
Cool.
He is doing a thing called the Genesis Project, which is a devised retelling of, I believe it's the first 12 chapters of the book of Genesis.
Hmm.
And then I'm doing a thing called Ex Nihilo, the Cosmogonic Puppet Show, which is a devised puppet theater piece that we just started rehearsal on this week. We are writing scripts right now, and it's going to be a series of creation stories, and creation stories in kind of the broadest way possible. We have some kind of traditional creation stories. There's a Native American story that we're performing, but we also have a story that is about the creation of the electric chair, which is insane.
Yeah.
so it is creation myths or creation stories in, like I said, the broadest way possible. But that goes up in the middle of April, and we would love to have you come and check it out there, people out there in podcast land. Tickets are available through the College of the Arts box office. You can Google that, and it gets underway on April 8th.
All right. Well, awesome. Jim, I appreciate you coming by and looking forward to checking out that show and hearing more about the upcoming shows in the coming months and year. And always a pleasure to chat with you about wrestling, comic book, and all things nerd culture.
You know it. Thank you, Brandon. I appreciate it. This was fun.